Thank you for joining us this morning.
Of course.
Continuing on in our series, we're going to ask you some questions and see if we can learn a little bit about yourself and Palm Vascular and the vascular space. So why don't we start with a little introduction from yourself on how you ended up as the CEO of Palm Vascular.
For sure. So when I was younger, I thought I wanted to go into investment banking, graduated from Duke, went into equity trading, and then a small stint in investment banking in Manhattan. Wasn't really my forte, and I wasn't really happy. So I started searching for new opportunities. My career took a hard right, partnered with what at the time was a chief vascular surgeon of LIJ North Shore and Staten Island University professor, vascular surgeon, is very famous in the Northeast. And at the time he had one center, and we built that up to six centers or so. Worked there for 3 years as the director of operations, learned this very new business, but I loved everything about it. Essentially I was a one man band. So I did everything that was related to operations, from literally HR, inventory, supplies, learning, moving the equipment, the clinical aspects, the scheduling, the software, you know, the revenue cycle. It was pretty amazing and dynamic, and it was wonderful. So I saw the opportunity, but I really didn't think that that group was going to work out for me. So I gave him my 6-month notice, found a partner in Miami, a small doctor out of Mount Sinai. And that's how Palm got started in the end of 2010. And from there, we grew into the largest peripheral company in the state of Florida. And then last year, we recently concluded our first acquisition of the largest private podiatry practice in Florida. So now we have 20 offices in podiatry as well. And that's our long story short.
Okay, so for those who don't know, describe describe the non-podiatry elements of Palm Vascular.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Can you describe the non-podiatry, the vascular components of Palm Vascular? What services are you offering?
For sure. So we'll get into this a little bit, but we evolved from a dialysis access business, which at the time was the only procedure offerings that you could do in our centers. And then about 2012, 2013, the shift was pretty rapid to the peripheral market, where they allowed us to do peripheral angiograms, atherectomies, stent placements. So what we do is we focus on peripheral vascular disease, which is the clogging of your lower extremity arteries related to the heart disease that everybody knows. But PAD is actually just as prevalent. It's one of the most fatal diseases within 5 years, beating out most cancers. So it's a very aggressive disease, and we specialize in revascularization. So we open up the blood flow to the lower extremities to prevent limb amputation. So it's a limb salvage program is our main focus. It represents about 85 to 90% of our business by revenue. But we do have other servicing still tucked in, like dialysis access. We do veins. So we do spider veins. We do venous ablations and radio frequency. We also do some uterine fibroid embolizations. We offer a variety of services, but we still focus tremendously on peripheral vascular disease.
Okay. And do you do it, do you perform your procedures mostly in OBLs, or do you use a combination of OBLs and ASCs?
We are, and right at this moment, we are 100% OBL. We are going to be evolving into the ASC market, but it's a much longer process.
Okay. And why do you think your company has outperformed over the past 10 years?
I think in the beginning, in particular, we had a very generous business model with physicians, which would attract a lot of talent. We brought them on not as employees, but as partners and large partners at that. So for physicians that were looking for options, we were a great find relative to what was out there. In addition to that, we are very, very aggressive and dynamic in our marketing. And so we are probably one of the best practice builders around. We've proven that time and time again through our numbers and our growth. Even to this day, 13 years later or 12 years later, we are hitting record months. So I think we've tapped into a lot of multi-layered marketing tactics that are effective, and we've honed our skills in that over the years. And that is has driven more and more success and a positive momentum.
Have you seen your priorities shift over the past 10 years, how the company relies on you specifically as a CEO? Where are you spending more of your time now? And how do you think you personally helped the company succeed during that period of time?
Great question. I'd have to say that, you know, that answer probably changes on a 3-6 month period, right? How I'm spending my time based on what my team is functioning and based on the opportunities at hand. What is the market dictating? So I'd say this recently, more recently, we actually are facing some headwinds with some cuts. And so I've been forced to dive into operations pretty heavily to manage our margins and profitability and strategy and rethinking where we're heading. But in general, I'd say that I've had my team with me for over 8 years. We haven't lost an executive except for a recent shift in our CFO. And so it's been very fortunate for me that I focused mostly on development and growth. In the past year or so, it's been toward potential recapitalization with private equity, venture capitalists, you know, senior debt lenders. And so it's been mostly on forward thinking, strategy, and development. But at times I definitely have to dive back into operations.
And my last question before I open it up to the group is, ignoring the recent cuts, which is sort of everyone's primary focus of the last 6 months and more, remind everyone what you love about this category, this market. What are the 2-3 most exciting trends that give you reason for confidence, optimism, and excitement as you look forward over the 5+ years to come?
So despite some of the drawbacks and the recent cuts, there's still massive, massive potential growth. Our industry, even in the OBL space, still only has about 900 labs in the US, and you could easily justify 10,000 of them if you can keep taking away business to the outpatient world. And so, you know, there's just a lot of runway for growth. In addition to that, it's evolving into the cardiac space. You know, we are vascular, but it abuts the cardiac space, which is also right in the field of our niche and our expertise. And the cardiac space is a brand new opportunity that didn't exist more than a year or two ago. And so a lot of what we do is still in its infancy or toddler years. And I can't say that for a lot of markets. I know everybody focuses a lot on orthopedics because it's just so lucrative. And obviously the HMO market is very lucrative for those who are in managed care. But a lot of these markets are very matured and ours still has a lot of runway to go. In addition to that, it's very scattered. There are very few large players in our space, which gives companies like us a lot of opportunity, not just for organic, but for M&A activity.
Thank you, Ed. Any questions from the group?
Yeah, I have one, Eric. You know, I think one of the things that stood out from your opening comments is it sounds like there have been a few changes to your business over time. So you mentioned about sort of market shifts that allowed you to go beyond dialysis access. You mentioned more recent rate cuts. You mentioned moving into podiatry. Can you talk about let us into kind of your mind about what those experiences were like from the view of the CEO? Were these opportunities? Were these things you saw coming? Were these things that were handed to you? And just, you know, how did you think about managing your business through those 2-3 shifts in what you were confronting and opportunistically and defensively?
Another good question to insight. The way I operated actually kind of plays into an adapting market. We are always thinking out of the box. I call it our little black box fund. We are always experimenting, whether it's vertical integration, horizontal integration, new technologies, new procedures. We're constantly trying to be forward thinking, and that's one of the things that separates us. So when these opportunities arise, I think we're very flexible and nimble and ready to attack. And we did. We shifted rather rapidly from an access-only company to a dominant peripheral company. And we're ready to take whatever challenges are next. I will also tell you, though, it's not always as successful as it may seem from the CEO's perspective. So I may have this strategy and vision in mind about opening up podiatry centers. And in theory, that sounds great. Well, I did that. I actually own a wound care center now. I also opened up primary care practices and thinking that they would feed the system, but also be profitable. Turns out I'm not as good as a CEO and I don't know that market as well. And so I simply failed in those endeavors. My podiatry practice is still a thriving practice, but for what the vision was, it was a failure. And I think our CEO on the podiatry side tried the same thing where he tried to dip his toes into the vascular world and failed pretty miserably. And so I think that we did this merger acquisition here because I realized that when you have expertise in one field, it doesn't necessarily translate into another. So I'm more of a stay in your lanes for my own personal expertise and insight, but try to find a way to still take advantage of and exploit the opportunities that are there to benefit both the patient and the company as well. So I think that having the circle of care with podiatrists, and we even have some cardiology partners and vascular partners and IR partners, I think that it's really been a great thing to see how the entire circle works from the inside. And we're going to continue to try to adapt to all these new opportunities, but maybe with a little more caution this time around, because there's bigger consequences as we've grown.
Just picking up on that, trying to sort and organize those case studies in my mind, am I accurate in saying wound care and primary care were practice level, de novo, maybe even acquisitions, whereas podiatry was a management level merger slash acquisition? And that made a meaningful difference? Sort of assets acquired with managerial expertise versus without?
Perfect insight. Perfect. Yeah, that is a very big differentiating factor for us. Trying to manage it ourselves, we just didn't have the expertise. So yes, you had to buy it with the expertise attached and find people who are really good at what they do.
Okay, so with that in mind, in cardio and going back to wound care and primary care, are you looking to replicate that and find assets with managerial expertise attached? Or maybe even source that manager. Does a substitute for that equate to sourcing managerial expertise, or you're really looking to reduce risk further by knowing that you're buying an asset that has been, will be, is currently being well run?
Sorry, was that a question or?
The question is, are you still in the market for cardio, wound care, and primary care assets that come with attached strong management team?
So there's not a large...
Do you still believe in the theoretical synergies?
Absolutely, for sure. Now, we never got into wound care and we really don't have plans to do so, and that could compete with a lot of our referral sources. So we allow the podiatry side to just continue doing that. Primary care, we are not in right now and have no plans to get in. But and the cardiac side, there's not a lot of outpatient ASC cardiac experience. So finding a specific management team for that could prove difficult. But there are opportunities that exist for sure. And we are going to try to find some sort of JV or partnership with an entity that has more ASC knowledge than we have.
Okay.
And we're in talks with both larger companies and smaller companies along those lines.
And the podiatry experience case study, which is mentioned frequently in the context of vascular, but I agree with you, rarely actually executed upon. What's your experience of that case study been? Has it been as synergistic in terms of cross referrals as you anticipated? What have been some of the obstacles that you've experienced firsthand?
So they actually, within the year that we've done this, they've become our largest referring providers as a whole, as an entity. So, and I believe we have a lot more to go. It certainly allows for insight on that side for us to refine our approaches to marketing techniques, because, you know, we're still marketing to the physicians. Just because you have an affiliation does not mean that you are going to get those referrals. You have to work for them just like you would anybody else, but at least you may have an edge here, an in, if you will, to be able to accomplish your goals a little bit better and to work with them a little bit closer. So it has been very fruitful on that front. As far as synergies, we've actually just begun the integration phase, so I can't attest to it, but we do plan on, you know, saving hundreds of thousands from the synergies and everything from healthcare insurance to our HR departments to our software offerings. We believe we can have some synergies there for sure, just like any other organization would.
Thank you. Turning back to the group, any more questions from the group?
I have a question. What is your strategy to fit into the value-based world in this niche market?
So it's a great question. Our procedures are actually incredibly preventative from ER visits, physical therapy, wound care, amputations, hospitalizations. So there's a lot of data that our industry has put out that shows that we are very cost-effective care when done properly. And so it's a matter of getting that message out. Personally, we haven't had great experience doing that in South Florida with our HMO partners. Our contracts are still relatively low.
Such a fucking hard.
Our contracts are relatively low, but we do believe we're positioned well for value-based care. Just a matter of getting that message across.
So I'm not sure I heard a strategy in there. Are you working with any of these large primary care groups to, you know, to hone in on a population? Are you just trying to sell the services to a to payers in general? Are you looking to take on any kinds of, I don't know what kind of risk there's available through, you know, Medicare or commercial contracts? Like, is there anything more than just your data that you want to share with the payers to let them know how cost effective your care is?
I would say we don't have a refined strategy in place. What we're doing is we're simply getting our services out to a lot of the individual physicians. We do have contracts with HMO. It's about a third of our business, and we haven't had any issues with them paying us. We haven't had contracting issues. We are able to continue to provide our services to them. We're still a lower cost option than hospitals. So no, our strategy hasn't been to renegotiate and go after them and carve it out, et cetera. We have engaged, I think you guys, at least in our beginning discussions, on how we might approach that. Because certainly we need some guidance in this field. We don't have anybody in our company that is from the insurance world. And so that's one of our weaknesses as an organization, is that we do need to figure out some of these angles as they play out in the micro and the macro environment. So if you have any advice later, happy to catch up.
Thank you, Andrew. Picking up on Andrew's question, how do you view the home care setting or home-based setting vis-a-vis some of the treatment offerings that you provide? My understanding is that in vascular, there is a growing interest in moving some of the inpatient to outpatient, outpatient to home-based as an alternative, as a cost savings alternative.
I don't know of any procedures we could offer at home. Ours require recovery times, lots of expensive equipment that can't be moved. The few things we might be able to do home-based are diagnostics, like ultrasounds, potentially some telemedicine offerings, but we're a very physical practice, so we have to literally check their pulses on their feet for the patients that are coming in for this disease. We do have to have techs that are screening. And at this moment, economically, have not seen a viable option for home care for some of the things that are even potentially there. I don't see that being a part of our business anytime soon.
Have you seen any of the competitors out there like Somatis and others offer interesting lower cost footprints, structures like home care that you're keeping a close eye on? And sort of like a broader question, who of the competitors do you keep a close eye on a national level?
So the first part of that is no, I don't know who they are, and I've never heard of any company doing anything outpatient. I mean, home-based in our industry. So happy to be educated on that. The second part of the question, who do we keep track of? I wouldn't say anyone in particular. I still view our industry as our biggest competition is the payers in general, because fee-for-service model. They just simply never really want to pay, regardless of what you do or don't do, or the value you provide. And hospitals. Hospitals are really struggling to try to keep all of this business inpatient. And I think that that's really where our competition lies, the hospitals and the payers. As for other, you know, direct competitors, we keep an eye on them. But again, even that is almost a false sense of competition. There are big players out there. There's Modern Vascular and there's NCP and there's, you know, a couple of other larger players. But they haven't really hurt us in our markets at all. They haven't entered our markets and we haven't entered theirs. So I follow their strategies and their business models just to see if there's ideas that we could take. And we have successfully copied some of them with the nursing home. So I can get into that in a little bit. But I'd say our greatest direct competition is the physician individuals themselves. So doctors who think that, well, bringing on a management partner means I have to give up some equity and some control, and I just don't want to do that. And so there's this cottage industry of consultants out there that, you know, charge some money to help doctors get up. I'd say that's our greatest direct competition in our niche, is the individual physicians and the consultants that are trying to help them get started.
Okay. I was actually looking at Somatis, and what's interesting is that they're heavily risk-based. Recent entrant into the space, I think there are lots of growth over the last 3 to 5 years. Don't know when they were founded, but a lot of it came very recently, mostly risk-based. And they use the home setting to influence patient behavior. We can talk about it offline, but it's part of their broader economic and strategic mission to impact vascular spend, both in their outpatient settings and in hospital settings, where they get rewarded for patients doing the right thing. And so an army of nurses, if you can imagine, visiting patients at home and doing A, B, C, and D. But just interesting, what thinking about in the context of Andrew's question and carving out risk-based contracts for you to benefit from directly.
I mean, I could see a lot of cardiovascular disease is, you know, the result of behavioral decisions throughout their lifetime, right? Everything from drinking sugared drinks to not exercising. So I could certainly see that if there is a way to change and alter behavior, that you can dramatically reduce the cost of cardiovascular care. Yep. No question about it.
They're based in Virginia. Okay, going back to the group, more questions from the group.
Yeah, this is David Friend. How are you?
Hey, David.
So a couple of quick questions. You may have already covered this. I'll just go back to the home care issue. There's a lot of issue with wound care for particularly people at home. And probably a lot of it's because they have poor, you know, circulation. So you're not in that space, but any sense, but there seems a big opportunity there. I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Home care. Home wound care? Is that what you're asking?
Is it a completely different animal?
From us, yes. It's a completely different animal. But
okay.
That being said, again, if, you know, My perception of home care being a problem is just the sheer cost of transporting, you know, these high cost people like nurses around, and depending on what they're doing, depending on what level you can provide. If it's MAs or lower, then yes, you could probably provide inexpensive cost at a preventative level. But when you start sending people around to homes, if it's not in a, let's say, nursing home or ALF facility, it becomes very cumbersome and very expensive. And particularly in Miami, we've tried this with our ultrasound business, where we've tried to send texts to them. They just simply don't reimburse enough on an individual basis. They'd have to double or triple their reimbursement for home care, which almost defeats the entire purpose. That's just as we see it on a micro level.
No, I think right. Okay, thanks so much.
Eric, can you talk for a minute about the integration, not so much from a cost synergies perspective, but just culturally, how you've thought about managing the vascular and podiatry sides of the business and getting the two sides of the business to communicate and collaborate and feel like they're part of the same organization?
So I haven't faced this challenge in my career yet. So this will be the first go around. So I just, for the record, I don't have a lot of expertise here. And we're going to be relying on guidance and wisdom from board members and advisors, et cetera. But that being said, we also have to be particularly cautious about how we implement this from an outward facing perspective. You know, we're doing this bold move by partnering with this large podiatry group, but we also can't alienate the rest of our referral sources. So we're not going to necessarily be trying to publicize this in a grand way. We're not going to be denying or hiding it either. So we walk this fine line of maintaining relations with, you know, the 60 or so podiatrists that somehow are partners in our field, and then the 500 or so that we serve. So we have to walk a fine line. And as far as internally, culturally, Jason, we really haven't done that yet. I have a feeling it's going to pose some challenges to us on both ends, but we're going to allow a lot of independence on the arms, given that there's not a lot of overlap in their service offerings. You know, we're going to allow a lot of independence to let them operate the way they have culturally before and do the same on the vascular side. At least that's our initial approach. I'll let you know in a year how that works.
My last question, Eric, is combination of things to be excited about and things to apply caution towards. On the excitement side, new revenue streams that possibly are out there in the periphery, but that you nevertheless are keeping an eye on. Examples, maybe hyperbarics, maybe...
it's on our docket. Just timing is important, but for sure, we are actually pretty deep into that business model. We just need to find the right timing and the right funding and the right operations. But yeah, great point. HBO is now a new market that we can tap into.
Yeah. And also on the excitement side of the ledger, new technologies that might translate to revenues or other things. Are there any specific technologies that you're keeping an eye on that you're excited about?
So we've danced around
new ways of doing business that may not be available to you today, but you can already see into the future, fast forward 3, 4, 5 years, you're confident will be integrated into your business model.
So, you know, just one of my personal tenets is that we don't bet our business on other people's businesses. It's kind of kept us out of harm's way in a lot of opportunities that we would have failed in. We have been in very close contact with our industry partners over evolving technologies, particularly in the diagnostic space, because they're constantly, as you mentioned, even the home care, constantly trying to figure out how to get better diagnosis earlier, which would reduce overall costs and increase our outcomes. Because in our field, the longer the disease progresses, the more complex the patient is, the more expensive the patient is. And so if we can get the disease early, it's a much more cost-effective way to do this. So a lot of the technologies in our space are revolved around early detection. So there's ABI machines are constantly trying to be upgraded and simplified. There are, I've seen home mats that detect where people would stand on this mat and it would tell you your blood flow to the bottom of your feet and it automatically would upload. Remote monitoring, as you guys know probably a lot better than I do, remote monitoring is gaining steam and traction in a lot of different industries. So we are watching technology. It hasn't necessarily, let's say, been our friend. On one hand, when you talk about in the room, we are one of the most forward-thinking technological niches in the market. Interventional radiologists have always been at the forefront of technology. But on the other hand, outside of the room, it really hasn't evolved into something that we're using. And this could just be our fault, or it could be that there's nothing as applicable to some other fields. But we've danced around a lot of the technology and it hasn't really been working for us yet. I'm still hoping. When you also talk tech, are you referring to software as well?
Yeah. So AI, data analytics could be interesting.
So I think
both on the back end and also on the front end in terms of delivery of care.
I think if you want to think real long term and get philosophical, AI is going to replace a ton of what we do. There's no getting around it. I think radiologists are a thing of the past. If you look at AI, I think the latest studies have shown incredible amounts of detection and accuracy far beyond what a human is capable of. And so in a field like ours, where you have to interpret things, that would dramatically reduce costs, improve diagnosis, et cetera. So AI is going to disrupt, I think, just about every industry in the world, right? And we're no different from that. As far as the surgical aspects, I've seen some robotics companies that are trying to think of ways where talented physicians can, you know, do these procedures from afar, but it's still in its infancy, nowhere near market penetration that really would affect us at this moment. EMRs have been evolving, but they're still very cumbersome, very clunky. We use eClinicalWorks, one of the largest ones. A lot of empty promises with inventory integration and seamlessness and template creations. In reality, once we signed on board, the reality struck that they just didn't have a lot of these things that we wanted and they weren't capable of doing it or investing in it. So we've been fortunate that some of our ER systems have sped up our process and communication with texting with patients and scheduling, and some of the front end software is great. The revenue cycles is great, but a lot of the integration is still very clunky and hasn't really worked for us yet. I'm hopeful that at some point more solutions will present themselves, because we are facing massive cost increases with labor, with rent, with other items. And so we could definitely use some technology to help our productivity.
Eric, I probably should have asked you this at the beginning, but just to sort of frame it for the rest of the group, number of providers, surgeons, locations?
Currently five locations with six entities and seven physicians.
And total number of medical providers?
So nurse practitioners is what you're asking?
No, just forget surgeons, all medical providers, including non-surgeons.
On the vascular side, they're all surgeons. They're all IR physicians or vascular surgeons.
Okay.
We don't have any clinicians.
Hi, Eric. This is Linda Michelle. I was wondering, you had said earlier that your main competition is from other independent doctors and hospitals. Do you have any strategies that you're working on or affiliations with hospitals or are thinking about that for the future?
For sure. We've been in deep talks with several hospital systems. You can imagine the immense amount of red tape and bureaucracy that we face. So those processes are very slow. In addition to that, instead of selling, let's say, a physician or physician group, you have to constantly get over each level of that hurdle. Very, very, very challenging. They also take a significant chunk, whether it be 10, 20, 30 plus percent of the equity. And then there's always the control interests that we have to negotiate. It's proven to be such a slow, cumbersome process that we've avoided it moving forward for now. If there are large opportunities, there's one group in particular that we really wanted, one of the largest groups in the US, and we had to deal with the hospital system because they were all employed by them. Ultimately, after many months of discussions, we were actually removed from that process. So it's a dangerous game for us to use our resources and focus on them. However, I think that that thought is changing, at least in my mind. A year or two ago, it was a novel idea and a difficult one. As it becomes more prolific and we see more of these programs joining companies like ours, and the physicians are seeing what that business model can reap, the physicians kind of get the best of both worlds. They get a dynamic, experienced operator from the outpatient world, and they get the contracts and the safety of the hospital, and they get the benefit of the ownership of both of those sides. So I think it may become a more growing trend than in the past, in which case maybe the process becomes a little bit more efficient. I'm definitely keeping an eye on that, and I'm certainly open to it because a lot of the large groups are hospital-based, and so their decision process is, do we split off from the hospital or not? And in this case, they can potentially stay with them. Physicians in general are risk averse. And so if they can keep their paycheck and still get some ownership, it's an attractive opportunity for some of them.
Thank you. Really Great. Interesting.
Any more questions from the group? Okay. I wanted to thank Eric for spending time with us this morning, and I hope you found it enjoyable and enlightening as well. We certainly did, learned a great deal, and look forward to staying in touch and to possibly working together over the months and years to come.
For sure. And if anybody ever has any questions, feel free to drop me an email or something. I'm always happy, always available. I think you guys have made yourselves available as well, and so I appreciate it. And it's a two-way street.
Cool. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you guys for your time.